You're tuned to CKW 95.9 FM. The show is People of Interest. My name is Michael Welch. And joining me right now is Professor Michel Chossadovsky. He is Professor of Economics at the University of Ottawa, Director of the Center for Research on Globalization, which hosts the critically acclaimed website www.globalresearch.ca. And he's also a contributor to the Encyclopedia Britannica. And his writings have been translated into more than 20 languages. Professor Chossadovsky is well-versed on the subject of economics and bailouts and the whole International Monetary Fund predatory lending apparatus. He is the author of The Globalization of Poverty and the New World Order, among other publications. And he joins us now from his home in Montreal. Michel Chossadovsky, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon. Good morning. Good morning.
Okay, it's great
to be on the program.
Yeah, well, delighted to have you. Okay, so we wanted to talk a little bit about what's been happening in Greece, the credit crisis that's overtaken the people there. I believe that there's a lot of enthusiasm, particularly among people on the left, with regard to the way the people rose up and in this referendum they said no. But I think there are certain caveats that should be attached to that, or at least you seem to think so. I know that you have a long familiarity going all the way back to Chile in the 1970s. You were there through that whole, the changes that took place there with the coup and then the whole the economics of that situation and how the International Monetary Fund has been able to and the Bretton Woods institutions have been able to essentially colonize these countries through debt. So I'm wondering if you can bring us up to date first of all with how the situation in Greece is unfolding as you see it right now. Has Greece, as a result of this referendum, have they been successful in standing up to the creditors, and or are they still under the thumb of these institutions?
Well, it's certainly a historical landmark that the protest movement against austerity has resulted in a decision, so to speak, to not to accept an agreement which is proposed by the creditors. But the creditors are not negotiating with the Greek people. They're negotiating with the government, and they also contemplate the possibility of not negotiating with that government and applying more drastic measures for the collection of that debt. And we must understand that the creditors are not necessarily interested in getting their money back. What they're interested in is restructuring a national economy, taking over real assets, appropriating public enterprises, land, displacing existing national industries, and so on. That is the purpose. It's the acquisition of wealth, of means of production, privatization, impoverishment, the reduction in the levels of wages. All of that is part of a macroeconomic agenda.
I think that needs to be emphasized that, yes, they've put out all this money, but they have no real interest in getting it back. This is their mechanism by which they get leverage to interfere with the governance of these countries.
Well, they want to maintain the debt. That's very important. And one of the mechanisms that the IMF has used in over 100 countries is that if a country can't pay back an IMF debt, which can't be rescheduled, incidentally. It's part of the IMF Articles of Agreement. IMF debt can't be rescheduled, but then what they say is that we will lend you more money, and with the money that we lend you, you will pay us back. And they set up a bilateral committee. They set up a committee of countries. The case of Vietnam is quite revealing. You set up a committee, Friends of Vietnam, and it just so happens those Friends of Vietnam is Japan and France, former colonial powers. And then you say you have to pay back, imagine, pay back the debts of the Saigon regime, which were used to finance to finance the U.S.-led war. They had to be repaid, and they wouldn't do anything until those debts were repaid. And what they did is that they asked the French and the Japanese to lend the money to Vietnam, and then Vietnam, post-war Vietnam, would then repay the IMF. So that's the mechanism. It's a principle of usury. You lend money to your debtors so that then they can pay you back, and then of course the debt goes up and up and up, and then you as a creditor are in a position then to take over real wealth, which is not money. Money is paper money or whatever. It's a concept. But the real wealth is, of course, real assets. And that's what they're interested in, is the acquisition of wealth within the country. And it also is predicated on the impoverishment of the population, of the workers, okay? Mm-hmm. So that you establish lower and lower wages. I recall when I was in Mozambique, and the IMF had come in and said a wage of something of the order of $20 a month for rural workers was unsustainable. They blocked it because the government had decided to increase it from approximately $17 a month to $21 a month. These were very poorly impoverished workers in the countryside. But what I'm suggesting here is that the creditors have certain rules that they follow. They're supported by tremendous powers, including military, okay, to act on their behalf, and they're not likely to simply abandon and give in to the Greek government. They will twist the Greek government. They may, in fact, envisage regime change. Some kind of coup. And when you look at the balance sheet of countries which have been subjected to IMF reforms, I'm not referring necessarily only to third world countries, you realize the extent of manipulation and impoverishment resulting from these creditor imposed reforms is beyond description. I'll give you the example of Peru, and I was in Peru in the late early 90s. In 91, the IMF, and that was actually what is interesting, that this was really there was a government in the mid-80s, it was the government of the APRA, which has said we will only pay back a certain percentage of our export revenues to meet our outstanding debt obligations. And when the government then was replaced by Fujimori, which was a very small splinter party, which was spearheaded into power, they then imposed a drastic austerity measures and shock treatment. Fuel prices went up 30 times overnight. 30 times, not one or two or three, but 30 times overnight.
Slightly unreasonable, I think.
Well, no, I mean, it was simply so drastic, but they've used drastic measures in so many countries. I mean, in Ukraine in 1994, energy prices went up by 900% overnight, okay? And then they said, well, we're going to lift the trade barriers to promote competition with the bread basket, okay? The bread basket was collapsing. So you collapse the bread basket, Ukraine bread basket through a 900% in energy prices, and then you say we will deregulate trade so that the United States can come in and compete, you know, with local producers. So the objective was really to destroy the national economy, and And I don't see that the creditors will actually cave in to the demands of the Greek people within the framework. I mean, within the framework of the European Union, the Eurozone, but also NATO. Okay, because bear in mind, Greece is a member of NATO, and in fact, a very large percentage of its budget is actually allocated to NATO. It's allocated to military expenditures, and that is one of the underlying reasons for this crisis.
There are a number of ways of pressuring these governments to comply with their demands, and if it's they can't, I think that there's the Confessions of an Economic Hitman, John Perkins, who kind of laid out the different steps that are taken, which involve trying to co-opt the leader, and if they can't be corrupted, then you apply that kind of economic or that debt pressure, and if they stand up as Saddam Hussein did, or in the 2003, then you launch military under a different context, pretext, of course. Is that the way you kind of see it?
Well, you know, there's so many different case studies of countries. There's also Yugoslavia, and now Yugoslavia and Greece are within the broadly within the same region of Southern Europe. And they're also strategic from a geopolitical standpoint. But then in Yugoslavia, there was a whole set of negotiations and restructuring which lasted almost 10 years. And then it reached its climax in 1990, and the country collapsed. Okay, and then that crisis was then tied into NATO intervention. Now, I'm not suggesting anything with regard to Greece, but what I'm saying is that there are many avenues. This is financial warfare. It's not democracy, or it's not negotiation. And I think we also have to recall what was called the bail-in crisis in Cyprus just a couple of years ago, whereby the creditors would come in and simply confiscate bank deposits. Now, the European Union has actually passed, and it's also been accepted in many other countries, the notion that bank deposits can be confiscated by creditors to meet those financial institutions' debt obligations. So, in other words, the savings and the current accounts of Greek citizens could be confiscated through this procedure, which is called bail-in. Okay, in fact, what they do is that they go in and they confiscate the bank deposits. And there's nothing which actually protects that from occurring. They can do it, and they have the mechanisms to do it. We saw it in Cyprus. Of course, it requires complicity at the governmental level to implement that procedure.
Okay. And we only got just a brief, only about a minute or two left in the show, but I want to thank you for coming in. Do you have maybe just a quick comment about where you see things headed as a result of this, the referendum result and the stance that the government seems to be taking?
Well, it's a very complicated crossroads. We've published this morning several perspectives on what is likely to happen, and some of them are quite different, and some of them are contradictory. But I don't see this emerging as an easy negotiated solution. The creditors have been blackmailing the Greek government to come up with a solution by the end of this by Sunday of this week. Okay, so that in effect what they're saying is, okay, we have an original draft agreement which was submitted, and we now invite you to make minor amendments to that draft with a view to reaching a solution. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure to what extent the Tsipras government is in a position to actually come up with a solution. It's also its own survival which is at stake. And then we see that there's the new finance minister. Now, was that finance minister changed on because he's going to present a different perspective? All those are questions which I think will be emerging within the next week or two as to how this process will be evolving.
Well, Michel Chostadovsky, I want to thank you very much for sharing those insights with us, and we look forward to seeing more of your work on it's the globalresearch.ca website. Professor Michel Chostadovsky, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Delighted to be on the program. Bye for now.